Memphis. NHL, the Blackhawks play in Anaheim tonight. College basketball, number 19, UW Badgers upset in double overtime by Indiana, 75-73 last night. And number 10, Marquette meets Villanova tonight. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Wednesday, the 27th. Cloudy and breezy, occasional light snow and freezing rain, little accumulation. High today, 29. Right now, wind is calm, 25 degrees in Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:10, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am very, very happy to have 3 guests for part one of today's morning show, including Steve Musenden, who has been on the morning show before. He is executive director of the Racine Literacy Council and has held that post for the last 4 years. And on several different occasions, Steve has been with us on the morning show to talk about the good work of his agency. Steve Musenden, it's great to have you back on the morning show.
Well, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Greg. I appreciate the opportunity, as always. And I'm just looking forward to 2019 and the Racine Literacy Council. We have some things on task, and I think the community is going to be excited about what we're about to do.
Very good. And I'm excited about today's conversation because you've brought 2 people with you who are, let's say, just 2 soldiers in a vast army of volunteers and staff members who make such a difference and make the good work of the Racine Literacy Council possible. We're going to be talking with Manny Ferris, who is the coordinator of something called STEPS, which is kind of the entryway for people in the Racine Literacy Council, the student tutor early or entry program program. And then we also have with us Jaime Vargas, who is one of the volunteer tutors. And all of this would be for naught if there weren't energetic and gifted and committed tutors like Jaime Vargas doing this important work. So we want to welcome both of you for the first time to the morning show, Manny Ferris and Jaime Vargas. Good to have both of you on the morning show.
Thank you for having us.
Steve Musenden, just how many people are we talking about who make the Literacy Council go?
Right now, we're probably averaging annually about 225 students that we touch in the community. And right now, we have approximately a little over 105 volunteer tutors that come in and provide the services that we need.
One of the things that's probably especially important for us to talk about and for our listeners to understand is that the work of the Racine Literacy Council, although it includes what we sort of classically, traditionally think of as the work of a literacy council, goes well beyond that. Explain to our listeners the scope of what the Racine Literacy Council does.
Funny you should mention that. The scope has actually broadened. We are just a little bit more than just your basic reading, writing, and math. One of the most recent additions to the Racine Literacy Council has been our 509 high school equivalency diploma program. We started that in October of 2018, so now we run the full gamut. We run programming for people that have low literacy skills all the way to an opportunity to receive your high school credential. Before, we only had pre-GED classes, and now we've taken the next step and implemented a HSED program at the Racine Literacy Council.
Before we talk to the two guests you've brought with you, I wonder if you could maybe say a word about what keeps the Racine Literacy Council functioning. What kind of an agency is it, and what are sort of the primary means by which the bills get paid and all of this is allowed to happen?
Right now, as most know, and I can repeat, the Racine Literacy Council is a nonprofit organization. We have a large number of donors that donate to the Literacy Council. We also have organizations such as United Way, community development block grants, where we get funding from. We also have grants that we apply for during the course of the year. And so every year, it's the slate goes back to zero, and we start all over again. Mm-hmm. And we actually produce our outcomes, and so the funders that fund us can see some of the progression that we've made in the community. So it's a statistic-based relationship where we have to produce outcomes in order to show the progress that we're making at the Racine Literacy Council.
Wow. Over the course of the 4 years that you have been executive director, what would you say have been maybe the most significant changes that have occurred and or maybe the most significant challenges that you and your agency have had to confront?
I think one of the most significant challenges has been bringing the agency into the 21st century with the technology that you need to be relevant. Bringing in, computers, laptops, things of that nature, so the students can have that access as well as have the programming they need, because right now, computer literacy is one of the tenets that you need in order to function in today's society. And prior to, we didn't have that. One of the other things that is really, really important, and it speaks for both our program coordinators and the tutors, is the level of passion that each has to come to the Literacy Council and work. I mean, I can't say enough about the staff, and I can't say enough about the volunteers that come in and give their time. I could just imagine, if you had to put a number to the hours that the volunteers work with the students, it's astronomical, mm-hmm. Astronomical.
So we have Amani Ferris with us, who is coordinator of something called STEPS, the Student Tutor Entry programs, and first of all, explain kind of the truth behind that interesting acronym. In what way is this an entry for the people who are part of the Literacy Council?
Yeah, so it stands for Student Tutor Entry Program. So that is where most of our new students will begin under my umbrella. And we do it that way just because that way the students can become a little bit more familiar with the organization. They can get more comfortable with the faces that are there. And that way we can, know that they're serious and they want to be here. And another reason why we call it the Student Tutor Entry Program is because that's where tutors also start. The tutors will go through a long tutor training. Not that long. It's about like 2.5 hours. So we'll train them and kind of let them know what to expect. You know, when they come in, they do not have to lesson plan. That is all on us. We kind of just go over basically, like I said, what to expect, a student lesson plan, where to find all the resources that they need when working with students. And if they have any other questions, they, you know, just ask us during that particular training. And there's always a coordinator downstairs whenever there is a step session going on. So if they ever come across something that they're just not familiar with, or they're unsure with anything, we will always be downstairs. So we'll never leave them hanging. We always try to just kind of be around, because we know it's it can be confusing sometimes if they're a new volunteer or something like that. So, yeah.
So typically, what are those first encounters like?
With the students or with the students?
Or, yeah, right.
Or for both.
Yeah, yeah.
So for students, it can, I feel like it should be, the first couple lessons are very easy because, you know, like I said, the first couple times we have an intro lesson where they're just going through what they are expected to do as students. We go through practicing calling out. So if they are ever sick or they can ever, you know, they can't make it one day, they practice that with a tutor to get them comfortable calling us. We even have a sheet printed out that, you know, they kind of role play. They practice with their tutor just, you know, especially with our English language learners, a lot of them aren't too comfortable calling if they have to speak English.
Wow, that's exactly the kind of thing most of us would just never stop to think about.
Yeah, and a lot of tutors are surprised when they come across that, because they're just like, wow, I wouldn't, like you said, we would have never thought that that would be an issue, or that would be something nerve-wracking for students who don't speak English. But we try and encourage it as much as we can, and we try to help them, you know, build up the courage to do it, because it can be nerve-wracking if English is not your first language. You know, calling and trying to communicate that message to someone who doesn't speak your language can be very challenging. So that is kind of what the lessons are in the beginning, and they have a tour of the building. They get familiar with our executive director. He's most of the time always there. And then with the staff, they get familiar with everyone. So it can be a little overwhelming just coming into a new place and meeting all these new people, but we try and make them as comfortable as possible. And then for the tutors on their first day, they actually shadow a more experienced tutor. So they'll sit in on a couple sessions and just kind of listen in and chime in. And if they have questions, they ask the tutor that they're shadowing, and they can do that from anywhere from one time to two or three times. We try and encourage our new tutors to shadow an ELL pair. And ELL stands for English Language Learners. So those are students whose first language is not English. And then an ABE pair, which is Adult Basic Education. So those students their first language is English. They know the language, and they're just here to work on reading, writing, stuff like that. So we encourage the new tutors to sit in on both, just so that they can identify the differences, because they are using different textbooks, they are using different materials. So we encourage both during those two shadowing sessions to sit in on both.
For the clients who come to the Racine Literacy Council, typically how do they find you? I mean, I especially wonder, given what you were just describing, for instance, their hesitancy in being able to even call to say, I'm sick, I can't come today. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even imagine the hesitancy that somebody might have about just picking up the phone or walking through the door the very first time just to see what the Literacy Council is about and see if they have something that they can offer them.
Yeah.
I mean, typically, how do people find you? Entirely on their own or through other means?
I want to say it's by word of mouth, because a lot of especially our ELL students, they have friends who go there. So, that, you know, they'll say like, oh, I'm learning English at the Racine Literacy Council. Why don't you just come in? A lot of our students are actually friends with one another, too. Mm. So they do know each other. So I'm assuming it's by word of mouth. But I believe Stephen would maybe know a little bit more.
Yes, as far as for the ELL students. But we, in 2018, with our new rebranding and our logo, we've actually introduced a marketing campaign. So we're actually starting to advertise where we hadn't advertised. In the middle to latter part of 2018, we've begun to advertise in various periodicals that these are the services that we provide, especially with the inception of the high school equivalency diploma program. People were not even aware that we offered that, so we wanted to get it into the mainstream.
Right. Amani, is it tricky in terms of when people walk in the door and English is not maybe a language they speak at all? And it's one thing if they do speak a language that you happen to speak or someone mm-hmm. else on the staff has to speak. But, I mean, are you ever confronted with people who where communicating with you is a real challenge? I mean, right from the very beginning.
Of course. And it's happened, I want to say, a number of times. But we make it work. From personal experience, I don't speak Spanish. I took a couple years in high school, but, you know, it's been a long time. So I know a few words here and there. And luckily, we do have an ELL coordinator. She speaks Spanish, but at the time, she was not in the office. So I was left with a person who was trying to come in for classes, and he spoke Spanish, and I didn't speak Spanish. So what I did was I pulled up Google Translate, and I typed it in, and I was like, what are you here for? Can I help you with something? Are you enrolled here? Are you asking about the status of your application? We made it work. We do have students who not only just speak Spanish, we have students who speak French. We have students who speak Korean.
Polish or what? I mean, it could be any number of possibilities.
We even have an ELL student who has his PhD, and his first language is Korean. So, I mean, it's not that we're just serving low-level students. He's a high-level student. He just wants to work on his English skills. So, yeah, we come across all different languages. We're a very diverse organization, and I love that.
I do. That's one of the best things about it. Do you have clients that are, because I think this doesn't get talked about as much as what we were just talking about, you also have clients who are born and raised in the good old USA, but for one reason or another have literacy issues that do not stem from coming someplace else or having another language first, but who lack basic skills, in a sense, their own language. That's also part of your mission, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, yesterday, one of the coordinators and I, we were talking with the tutor, and he was asking, you know, how can a student have a high school diploma, but he is reading at a third grade reading level? How does that happen? And you'd be surprised, you know, sometimes they just make it by just the pinch of a hair, and they, you know, they fall behind, but they just made it by like a little bit. So we do have students who have their high school diploma, but they are reading at a very low level. And then we do have students who were born and raised here, and they, you know, they just don't have the education, or that they're not at the level that they want to be at. So they come and just brush up. We have anywhere from very low level to very high level. So we try and cover as much as we can.
Right. And does what you offer vary drastically depending on those kind of issues? Or basically, is everybody experiencing the same kind of tutoring but just at different levels?
No. One of the great things about the Racine Literacy Council is that the coordinators, myself and my other colleague, Carolyn, we customize every lesson plan. So for steps especially, I handwrite every single lesson plan based off of what the student wants and what the student wants to get out of being here.
Wow.
So that that first intro lesson that we had that I had talked about earlier, they are actually going over their goals. What do they want to get out of being here? And it's broken into four categories. So it is family and self, employment, community civic engagement, and I can't remember the last one, academic.
Oh, okay.
So we kind of help them sit down and actually think about why they want to be here and how we can help them reach those goals. So they come up with all these full sheet of goals, and then once I start lesson planning, I look back at those goals and I, you know, help them. I look back and I'm like, okay, how can I help them reach that goal? So it's all customized.
Wow, that's very impressive, and I'm sure it's very valuable for the cause at hand. And I should think that one of the most gratifying things about this is that I would think, with maybe an exception or two once in a great while, everybody who is there, I'm talking now about the clients, desperately want to be there, are excited to be there, maybe a little intimidated, but it's not like certain other settings in which somebody is kind of showing up because their mom
forced.
Made them. Right. Or it's just the thing that you do. And this seems like you make a concerted effort to find the Racine Literacy Council and to get yourself there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just it's a situation in which you are working with people who are anxious to receive what you have to give and probably deeply appreciative of it.
Yeah, and it's very rewarding to know that our students want to be here and they're not being forced. And I think that's kind of what what helps us continue to do what we do, because if I feel like if a lot of the students were forced, it wouldn't work as well as it does.
Right. Very impressive. So I want you to introduce our third guest, because before we went on the air, you were saying something about Jaime Vargas, one of the tutors at the Racine Literacy Council, and how it is tutors like him that are so invaluable. I mean, yes. Absolutely essential to what happens there.
Yeah, so we have with us Jaime Vargas, and he was actually one of the first tutors I ever met when I first started working at the Racine Literacy Council. And he does so much for us, and we appreciate it. So we always joke around and we say, we need about 10 or 12 Jaime Vargases, because he does it all. He tutors. He comes in more than once a week. He's taught computer instruction classes to our tutors who need help, you know, using the computers. He's taught classes to students. So he does a lot. So I'll let Jaime kind of take the mic.
It's great to have you here. So, tell us, first of all, a little bit about what prompted you in the first place to become a tutor at the Racine Literacy Council. How did the idea even occur to you?
Well, I was born and raised in Racine, but I lived 30 years in the Twin Cities, and in August it'll be 5 years that I've been back. And my first year, I am strictly my mother's caregiver. But then the second year, I decided I wanted to give back, and I happened to come across their information booth, I think in the September festival that Racine has. And so then I joined them. And one of the strongest assets that the Racine Literacy Council has is their sense of community. You see that word thrown loosely in a lot of organizations, but they really have a sense of community. You can see when the students come in, the first week they're very shy. And then by the second or third week, they begin to interact with the other students and the staff, and that's what motivates me. And then also their faith and confidence in me has been helpful. Primarily when I started, I was working one-on-one with a student, and then in June they approached me that they wanted to experiment with the pilot class where we would have students on various multiple levels but in a group, because as I mentioned, usually you just work one-on-one. So I was assigned 4 students, and one ended up dropping out, but the other 3, they tested them, I think, after 15 weeks, and they all moved up to the level. And then they asked me if I wanted to do another pilot class, and I said yes, but they allowed me to modify it. What I'm doing now is I'm teaching everything that's on the Internet. There are so many resources. Again, as Steve mentioned, we have to change the way we teach students from the way we were brought up. And there's a lot of technology. She mentioned Google Translate. I use that a lot with my students. And there's other resources specifically on YouTube. But again, like I said, just seeing the satisfaction and the way they have the flexibility. They'll do the lesson plans, but you don't necessarily have to follow that. Say, for example, if a student comes in and that day he's worried that he has to fill out a job application, you can drop those lesson plans in the system with the job application. We had a student recently that he got his citizenship, and that was one of his goals that he was very concerned. So I made sure that he spent at least an hour on YouTube with the citizenship tutorials. So again, as I mentioned, they have a strong sense of community and their belief in the tutors, and that's why I love going there. I really enjoy.
I can tell just in the way that you're talking about this. Amani, tell us more about this pilots program that Jaime was assigned to. It sounds like it would be maybe a little more challenging situation for a tutor, but also obviously very rewarding.
Yeah. So the whole reason why we even thought of this was because we had such a long wait list, and we were like, well, how can we get students off this wait list to get them in the door and get them to start, you know, to start learning? So the coordinators and I, we sat down along with Steven, and we sat down and we were like, what can we do? What can we do? And then we thought, Jaime. Jaime does a lot. Jaime does so much. We wonder if, like, would it work if we, you know, tried this program, this pilot program where we had a number of students in different levels, would it work? Because typically when tutors and students work together in the STEPS program, it's if they do work in a group, the students are all on the same level. So that way it's a little bit easier on the tutor, and they're not like running around trying to figure out what student's on what page, which student is doing this. So we sat down and we thought, okay, what if we talk to Jaime about this? How can this work? So I think that idea came into place, I want to say like of April or May last year.
Yes.
And then we figured it out and we spoke to Jaime, and he was like, okay, let me just pull up some sample lesson plans and let's see if this is going to work. We looked over the lesson plans and we were like, this is great. We love it. And we had, I believe, 4 students, but then one dropped. And the 3 other students, they did amazing in it, and they graduated out of the STEPS program, and now they are paired in one-to-one tutors. So, and then the other student, like you said, got his citizenship class, or citizenship. He passed the citizenship test, so that was amazing. We love to hear good news like that. And his photo is actually on our Instagram page, so if you guys would like to check that out,
plug.
On there. Plug. Yeah.
Very good. So is this pilots program likely to expand?
We are hoping. We have 1 pilot class kind of going on right now, but that is more computer-based, as Jaime said, just to get the students familiar with, you know, finding their resources online, because a lot of information, a lot of beneficial resources are online and on your smartphone. So we appreciate Jaime kind of just showing the students, like, hey, you can pay bills online. You can apply for jobs online. You can do so much online. Like, a lot of our students just they don't know, because they don't know how to use computers.
Right.
So we appreciate him, you know, sitting down and just kind of starting from step one to all the way to however long it's going to take to prove or to show all these resources to
Fantastic.
Our students.
Yeah. Jaime Vargas, were you ever in any way a teacher before you began tutoring at the Racine Literacy Council? Because I know that some of your tutors have background actually
retired
teachers, or even sometimes in the course of their work, they have had to do things that might at least roughly resemble teaching or presenting and so on. Has this been a part of your life at all in any way, shape, or form, or has this been a very new adventure for you?
Sort of totally by accident. I am 63. I went 2 years to college, only completed 9 credits. In my second year, this one employment teacher needed an adult education teacher for a month because the teacher was involved in an accident. Back then, they were very liberal as far as the work requirements.
Uh-huh.
And because I had 2 years of volunteering as a teacher's aide, and they only needed a teacher for a month, they allowed me to teach without the degree. And so I worked at an employment agency where I had 30 students. On a rotating basis, students would leave and come. They would be tested every 5 weeks, and they had I would get them on a third grade level, and I had 15 weeks to bring them up to an eighth grade level. And so the subjects I taught were reading, writing, spelling, and English. And I didn't have any educational background. And I stayed there for a month, and they liked the work that I did. So they asked me, do you want to stay? And so I dropped out of school, and I stayed, and I worked 4 years for them. But I was not the brightest student growing up. I got C's and D's. And so that's why it's so ironic that the compliments that I get, but I can also relate to the students, the challenges they have. And so I think that helps me in being as resourceful as I can be, because I can relate to them.
Right. You've been there. You know what that feels like to be struggling with some of these issues that are so important.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I wonder, as you have been a tutor over the last several years, what kind of lessons you've learned about being a better and better tutor. I mean, in other words, are you a different tutor now than you were when you first began doing this?
I agree. I think a lot of it's patience and also a better understanding with adult students, because a lot of our students have a family, have a job, and those are priorities. And just to see them to make an education a desire to improve themselves, that's been one of their challenges. And then particularly with women, too, especially if they come from a culture where women were secondary and going to school. They are now breaking the mold. They now see that it's important to continue the education. And a lot of them, want to do it for the children. And so just seeing the students motivated, and it gives me the goal to help them and reach their goals.
Wow. I just love that so much. And it reminds us that for many of these people, they are taking a gigantic leap of faith into something that earlier in their lives would have been utterly unimaginable. And for them to take that bold step to explore something brand new, and I'm sure very frightening in some ways and also exciting also. And it's so great that you are helping to make that possible. Amani Ferris and Steve, please chime in if you like. One of the questions that I'm thinking about involves the situation of undocumented aliens and how, of course, for them, these are scary times compared to what was once the situation. Does that enter in, first of all? I would assume that at least from time to time you are working with people who are undocumented. And is that sort of an added layer of difficulty for them and for you?
I could definitely say yes. We've actually experienced a little bit of a decrease in the number of students that attend the Literacy Council because some of the students did not have the proper documentation. You know, it was not safe for them to be on the roads, things of that nature, especially since there's been an increase in ICE incidences in Racine County. So it begs the question, do I take a chance? Mm-hmm. And so we provide the information to them to say, hey, we wouldn't want you to put yourselves in jeopardy. But at the same time, you know, they're grown. What do you tell them? I mean, so it's a hard call. But we have experienced a decrease in about maybe 10 to 15% of our students directly related to that issue.
Very interesting.
And if I could expand on that, each year they have a booklet that students. It's called Life Voyages. It's stories from the students that they write. Well, 2 years ago, one student particularly wrote her fears with the new transition of expectations and how her and her children were fearful on how they were going to be treated. It was such a powerful story that she read that she actually got a standing ovation.
Wow.
But the fear is there.
You know? Sure.
The fear is there among the students that they're afraid.
And I'm sure it makes a huge difference for them to know that you are there without judgment.
Correct.
And there to help. Did you have one?
Yeah, and as the coordinators, because we do work closely alongside with these students, you do build relationships with these students because you see them for every single week for however long they're there. And then, you know, once they stop showing up, you start to wonder, like, did something happen? You know, it starts to take a toll on you. You start to worry for your students and wonder, like, is everything okay? Did something happen? So just from the coordinator's perspective, I think it's hard as well on us because, you know, we do see these students every day and, you know, we work for this nonprofit because we want to and we're passionate about it and we care for them. So that's just kind of my two cents.
Of course. No, I can understand that. And I'm sure the bond becomes very deep. What's the range of age of clients, would you say? I mean, who are the youngest people you serve? Who are the oldest you have served?
I believe we have one student that is 17 and a half, correct?
Mm-hmm. 17 and a half.
And the oldest,
I think, is probably about 72, 73.
Yeah. Wow.
So we cover everything.
We have a wide range.
How about your tutors? What age range are we talking about there?
We do, I believe our youngest tutor as of now, I want to say she's 16, and then our oldest is...
We don't disclose that information. we have some veterans. Yeah, we have some veterans that's been with the Literacy Council. I want to say some has been with us for 20 years.
Wow, that's just great.
Didn't you still partner with Parkside with the students?
Yeah, so we did. We did a partnership with UW Parkside, so we had a college class
internship.
Come in and they tutored for the amount of time that they needed for their class. So they, I don't know, I think maybe like 1920s, I want to say.
Yeah. Wow, very good. Well, that's wonderful that so many people are experiencing all of this together.
Yeah.
And when it comes to one-on-one tutoring, and I think that's less what you coordinate, I think.
Yeah.
But can you just say a word about the importance of hooking up the right client to the right tutor? I mean, the chemistry that...
So we do have coordinator meetings every single Monday. So all three coordinators and Stephen will sit in, and we go through this list of students and steps who are close to reaching their hours. So they, once they reach 40 hours, then they're tested. And if they test and then they are moved into a one-to-one. So once they do their testing and all that, we sit down and we look at their preferences. So some students prefer to work with female only. Some prefer male only. Some, you know, want a specific day and time. Some want only weekends and we're only open on Saturdays. So we look at their preferences and then we look at the tutor preferences and then we just kind of match from there and we'll contact both parties, students and the tutors, and say, you know, hey, we think we found a match for you. Does this day and time work? Are you flexible? So it's a bit of a lengthy process, but we get it done.
that's so exciting. And of course, that's one of those nuts and bolts things that might not seem like it matters. It probably matters a whole lot.
Yeah.
And when you get a great connection between tutor and client, well, Jaime, you can attest to that, can't you? Just what a special relationship can ensue.
Exactly.
And I can just tell from the way you speak about this that it is very powerful and meaningful for you. Steve Musenden, talk about the major fundraiser that is coming up for the Racine Literacy Council in the near future.
On March 9th, keeping in line with our new focus and new logo and hashtag, opening the door to education is part of our mantra now, and we are having an event called the Open Door Event. It's March 9th. It's going to be held at Memorial Hall from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Our keynote speaker is WTMJ's own Brian Nisnatsky, and we also have the UWM Mad Hatters as entertainment.
Ah, wonderful.
So come out and support the organization.
Very good. How do people find out more information about that event and, for that matter, more information about
the
Racine Literacy Council?
Directly to our website, www.racineliteracy.com. Go to the events section, and all that information is there. You can pick up your tickets directly online.
Right. And for somebody who wants to be a tutor or at least explore what's involved, is there information there as well?
There's information about becoming a tutor on our website as well.
Right. And is there a waiting list for people to be clients of the Racine Literacy? Or at the moment, are you able?
That's a constant. That's a constant. That's always in process. It depends. Right now, we're probably at about 15 students that we have on our wait list, and we're just waiting for the next tutor training, which is in March 30th.
Yep. Okay.
And hopefully, between now and then, we can actually get some of those students onboarded to the Racine Literacy Council.
Fantastic. Well, it's a terrific organization, and it is great to hear about all of the good work that you are doing, and I really appreciate you taking the time to join us to tell us the story of the Racine Literacy Council. Steve Musenden, the executive director, Amani Ferris, who coordinates the STEPS program, and Jaime Vargas, one of a number of hardworking and dedicated tutors essential to the good work of the Racine Literacy Council. I appreciate all three of you being part of the morning show. We wish you well with your big fundraiser on March 9th.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being part of the morning show. And for part two of today's morning show, I want to replay for you a conversation with best-selling author Brad Meltzer. In keeping with Black History Month, he'll be talking about a book that chronicles for young readers the inspiring story of Rosa Parks. Good to be talking to you. And it's always great, of course, to remember the legendary Rosa Parks. Tell us briefly about your own connection to this story. When do you first remember even knowing about Rosa Parks?
You know, the book is dedicated to my grandmother, who passed away a couple years ago, and it has to be from her. You know, my family was not political at all. My dad used to not vote because he thought it would make him get jury duty. That's how political my family was. which was an insane thing in my eyes, but that was how he did it. And it was my grandmother who was the political one and kind of told us these stories. And, you know, for me, the stories, yes, of course, in the book we tell the stories that you know about Rosa Parks, but the goal is to teach our kids even the stories they don't know. We show kids when Rosa Parks was herself a child. So you see that when Rosa Parks was 11 years old, a boy on roller skates came racing by and shoved her down to knock her over and bully her. And Rosa Parks popped back up and shoved the boy back. Now, the boy was white. Rosa Parks, of course, was black. And at the time, you didn't do such things. So this white mother of the boy comes racing over, gets in Rosa Parks' face and says, listen, you know, I'm going to have you put in jail forever. And when you're 11 years old and some woman's yelling at you, you know, most kids would go running. Rosa Parks stands up for herself in that moment and says, listen, your son picked this fight. I just don't want him bothering me anymore. And sure enough, that mother and that son never pick on Rosa Parks or bother her again. And I want my daughter to hear that story. I want my sons to hear that story, that sometimes you have to stand up to the bully. And in fact, the amazing part was, is a couple months ago when my son was being bullied, my older son said to my younger son, you need to be like Rosa Parks. You need to stand up to that bully. And my younger son said, yeah, I need to be like Rosa Parks. And I love the idea that to my young son, Rosa Parks is as vital today as she's ever been.
Mm. As you are painting the picture of the kind of life that she was living as a young person in the segregated South, we're reminded about the specter of white and colored elevators and white and colored drinking fountains. And I love the little moment when you show the very young Rosa Parks walking up to a so-called colored drinking fountain with a really interesting expectation, which proves not to be true. Tell our listeners about this image.
Yeah, this was actually something that I found. Rosa Parks actually believed when she was younger than when she saw the words colored water fountain, that it meant that the water came out in multicolors. So you see in the picture a rainbow water fountain is coming out. The water is rainbow colored. And, of course, that's not what colored means at all. But those were her own thoughts. We didn't make that up. We actually pulled it from her own words. And I just, you know, for my kids, the amazing part is they don't know these stories. They never saw this. And to see that this little girl could overcome those obstacles, that she could find the strength within herself, that's what I want to leave for my kids. And the goal for us long term, it's never just about one book. You know, we're doing I Am Albert Einstein in September. We're doing I Am Jackie Robinson in January. And the goal long term is we want to build a library and help you build a library for your kids, for your grandkids, for your nieces and nephews, that you can give them real heroes that they can look up to. Because you know what? We're a country right now that needs heroes.
Right. One thing that was interesting in the way you told this story was that Rosa, as a youngster, has sort of a sidekick, some young boy who is kind of side by side with her. And the thing that's sort of interesting is that this young black boy will be experiencing the same thing that Rosa is, namely segregated schools, and he will react as though certain things are great, and Rosa is the one who sees the injustice. Something like the fact that the school year at a black school would tend to be much shorter than the school year for the white school, because all these blacks would be busy working in the field for part of the year. And I thought that was an intriguing point to make, that sometimes two people can experience the same reality, and both of them might not even realize, to the same extent at least, that they are being dealt an injustice. And that seems to be something about which Rosa Parks, even early in her life, had exceptional clarity about.
Oh, no question about it. And that's also there because, you know, our readers here are little kids. And when I tell my kids, my little kids, my 12-year-old, my 8-year-old, even my 6-year-old, when I tell them that, you know, you only have to go to school for part of the year, they think that's a great thing. No school. So I need to have a voice in the book that reflects their own opinions to see, no, that's not what we're rooting for here. You want equal schools. You want to have the same thing. And Rosa Parks, you better believe, understood it. When she was a little girl, she used to actually take her books home every day from school because they were worried that someone was going to come and burn the school down every day. That is a tough little fighter. You know, we've turned Rosa Parks into this matronly old woman as if she's got glasses and a walker. You know how old Rosa Parks was when she sat on that bus? 42 years old. She was in her prime, and she was always a fighter. You know, she used to say, when they said, you got to go to your own water fountains and drink there, she was like, I'm not going to drink there. I'd rather go thirsty. Mm. When they said, you have black-only elevator is down the hall, she would say, you know what, I'll take the stairs. She was always fighting back. We just happened to turn her, history turned her into this kind of matronly old woman. But that's not the right story. That's not the full story. And I love that in I Am Rosa Parks, we get to give kids that real picture of who she was.
Right. And the fact that that gesture of defiance on that city bus was not sort of the last straw. No, I've had enough. Finally, I'm going to do something about it. It was actually all but inevitable that that would happen with Rosa Parks, because that had already been her legacy. In some respects, although it was a dramatic moment, it should not have come as a surprise to anybody who knew her and knew the way she had lived her life up until then.
Sure, right. We see her as a seamstress. She also worked for the NAACP, making sure that people's voices were heard. The amazing part that I found that I never knew was that when she stood up to that bus driver wasn't a stranger. She actually had been kicked off personally his bus before, that she entered the bus through the front that he was driving, and he said, you got to go enter through the back. And he literally grabbed her by the shirt sleeves and threw her off the bus. So she wasn't standing up to a stranger that day when she stood up on the famous bus. She was standing up to someone who had kicked her off before. She was standing up to another bully in her life. And that takes, to me, even more guts. So, you know, I always, you know, it's funny because I get parents who say to me, I was reading this for my kids and I learned stuff I didn't know myself. And I love, that's the goal of the book, is so you can share with your kids these real life heroes.
Mm. Can you say a quick word about the talented person who's responsible for the wonderful illustrations here that accompany your text?
I'd be honored to. Sure. No, our artist is Chris Eliopoulos. And what I love about Chris, you know, when you do a children's book, usually the publisher picks out who the artist will be, and you may not know that person. Chris is a dear friend of mine, and I picked him and said, this is why we need to do this with. And the reason is because Chris's art is kind of is influenced by almost from Peanuts from Charlie Brown mixed with Calvin and Hobbes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to do cute. It's easy to do funny. What it's really hard to do is do heart. And that's what those artists had, is heart. And so when he's drawing Rosa Parks as a little girl, or doing I Am Abraham Lincoln or I Am Amelia Earhart, you get so much heart from him. Mm. And suddenly kids fall in love with that, and they react to that in ways that I wish I could take credit for, but it's really a testament to his amazing art. That's what's going to make your kids turn the pages, is he makes them really fun and lovable.
And I appreciate very much that at the end of the book we have a few photographs of the real Rosa Parks. We have the real Rosa Parks. Go ahead.
And what kids do is what kids do is they read the book, and then their first question is always, is that real? And so at the end of every book, we put a double-page spread that shows, you want to see, here's a picture of Rosa Parks on that bus we just told you about. You see the real picture. Hmm. Here she is when she's a little girl in that schoolhouse. That's her school. We didn't make that up. It's real. And kids, their minds explode in that moment because they go, oh, my gosh, this really happened.
Right. This is
and
not make-believe.
That was the vital part.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, it's one thing when you read a book about a happy dragon and you go, oh, and you take the lesson, you know it's not real. But think of how much more powerful it is when you get to teach a kid that history is not a bunch of dates and facts you memorize, but history is a selection process, and it chooses every single one of us every single day. And the only question is, do you hear the call? And this is the call. These books will hopefully be the call for your child. Let them fall in love with history and see how important and how powerful they can be themselves.
I Am Rosa Parks is part of a book series called Ordinary People Change the World. It is I Am Rosa Parks, a dial book for young readers, an imprint of Penguin, and the author, Brad Meltzer. Brad Meltzer, thank you so much for creating this beautiful book. We look forward to the other books which are to follow it. And thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thanks so much, Greg. Always great to be back.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, in a departure from what was originally planned, my guest will be Dr. Todd Curtis, who is from the faculty of the University of Texas. He is a special guest at Carthage this week and giving a presentation tomorrow at 5 o'clock with the intriguing title of Human Dissection in Ptolemaic Alexandria. It is a lecture in which we learn about some of humankind's earliest attempts to truly understand the human body. And on Friday, we're going to have a couple of tax experts with us to talk about the changes in the tax code and what might be ahead for you if you haven't yet filed your taxes, and some tips on how you can avoid some unhappy news come April 15th. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock, and the program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. There you will find past morning show interviews stretching back actually 7 to 8 years, so a wealth of past interviews there for you to either revisit or to listen to for the very first time. Again, at our website.